Welcome to TwerpCast, episode 71, Fallcast 2013, our 7th annual Fall TV Preview and Bitch Session, because we can rebuild TV, make it stronger, faster,
but not better.
I didn't say we couldn't make TV better, because we absolutely could. Today, I would like to introduce you to Jim Caswell, Battlestar Flight Instructor and Executive Producer of TwerpCast.
And he's Doug Zeitlin, co-executive producer of TWERPS, and man voted most likely to flunk out of S.H.I.E.L.D. Spy Academy.
Today, we're going to be discussing our favorites and our predictions for the new fall TV season.
Every year, TV tends to follow what's been popular the year or two before it in movies, and what's really caught the advertiser's eyes from the season before.
Therefore, everything that is last year's fashions is going to be put on sale.
Exactly. So this year, fantasy is going to have a strong showing, while sci-fi is going to be limited to mid-season replacements, unless it's a show about superheroes.
Thank you, Marvel. But that being said, look at the crap that's on the SIFI channel right now. I mean, there really is no sci-fi on that channel, Sharknado. They should just change their name to the Sharknado Network. Every week, we're going to jump the shark.
You have to really wonder if the executives over at SIFI all sit around in a room, getting high as a kite, and somebody sits around and goes, "Dude, what if we did a movie about sharks caught up in a tornado?" And somebody across the table goes, "Dude, that's brilliant! Let's get Tara Reid to star in it!"
No, I doubt it's that sophisticated. Two SIFI executives walk into each other at a red box. "Dude, you got Twister in my Jaws." "No, you got Jaws in my Twister." "Whoa!"
But you know what's even more disturbing than the production of Sharknado, Doug?
Everything on the Sci-Fi Channel?
Well, there's that too. But the fact that people actually sat down to watch it, to make it one of the highest viewed movies on the Sci-Fi Network.
Well, okay, your first statement kind of confirms what I'm already saying. People actually sat down and watched it, because the rest of Sci-Fi Channel is really unwatchable.
Well, they still have Warehouse 13 for 6 more episodes.
Well, at least I have a good jumping off point for Sci-Fi Channel. However, this is not just the Sci-Fi Channel bitch session. We're going to touch all the networks. So let's go the direction that you started. We're really strong on fantasy shows this year.
Yeah. Fantasy is going to be coming out of the block strong, but I don't know how well it's going to finish. You've got shows like Sleepy Hollow coming out. You have the Vampire Diaries spinoff. You've got the Once Upon a Time spinoff called Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. And you've got Dracula.
Of those listed, Jim, I am going to at least try Sleepy Hollow. I don't expect it to be very good, but despite the fact that it's just a reimagining of the Irving Washington story, I want to see what kind of creativity they put into it.
Well, as far as I can tell from the previews, it's the story of Ichabod Crane, who somehow mystically or semi-scientifically, I'm not quite sure how he gets there, but he's teleported from the past into present day. But he doesn't come alone. The Headless Horseman is also on the loose. And from what I can tell, it is the "what has the Headless Horseman done this week" formula.
From the brief looks that I've seen, it kind of looks more like Ichabod Crane's CSI. It's more like this is going to be a different take on modern crimes, because we're looking at it from the Ichabod Crane standpoint. And then in the background, you have this ominous overtone of the big bad guy being the Headless Horseman.
The funny thing is that I can look at this and I can go, okay, Elementary actually did pretty good last year. So let's find another fictional detective that's set in the past and bring him into a future setting and let him solve mysteries. And somehow, out of everything that's out there in literature, they chose Ichabod Crane.
I think it has more potential than you're giving it, Jim. Because it's Ichabod Crane, it has the potential to be edgier, a scarier show. They can take this show a direction they really couldn't take Elementary. Elementary is never going to hit on the supernatural or the occult, whereas Ichabod could do that every week.
True enough. You said that you were willing to give it a shot. I'll let you watch the first couple of episodes and let me know what you think, and then I might give it a shot. Xfinity is a wonderful thing these days.
You know, other shows, considering how unoriginal The Vampire Diaries is, I think it's really ironic that the spinoff would be called The Originals. And I realize it's the storyline, not a description of the show.
Yeah, I fully expect The Originals to be a success because The Vampire Diaries, for some god unknown reason, even though even the Twihards are finally coming to their senses, it still manages to stay a popular show, probably because it's on the CW. Any other network, and it probably would have gone down in flames in the first season. But, because it's popular, I fully expect The Originals to be popular. Just don't expect me to sit down and watch it, unless I'm tied to a chair with toothpicks under my eyelids.
I would find a way to kill myself with those toothpicks. Moving on, I don't care about Once Upon a Time. I mean, I don't hate it, I don't like it, it's neither here nor there, so I won't be adding Wonderland to my repertoire. Once Upon a Time is supposed to be a good show. I expect that Wonderland would be the same.
I actually do watch Once Upon a Time, and I enjoy it. Once Upon a Time in Wonderland is the only one on this list that I plan on checking out. But I'll be honest, I don't know how high my hopes are for it. It's going to be set in more of a historical period. I'm not quite sure how much crossover there's going to be between it and the original show. Once Upon a Time has a certain feel to it, and I don't know if they're going to be able to homage it rather than copy it directly. If they just run it through a photocopier, it's not going to last for very long, because no matter how close a copy is, it's never quite as good as the original.
Speaking of not quite as good as the original, the last show on our list is Dracula. I don't know what to make of Dracula. I would think, like Sleepy Hollow, that it has some potential for scary stories and dealing with the occult. I'm not sure, however, in a Twilight era, that a show that Dracula doesn't sparkle in will work.
I don't think that Dracula is necessarily going to sparkle or anything of that nature, but the idea of Dracula being the romantic lead does have a certain Twilight flair to it, that you're going to have the classic vampire slash Dracula fans who I think are going to sit there and go, oh, what are you guys doing? And you're going to have the Twihards, the few of them that are left, going, yeah, this isn't whatever his name was, the lead in Twilight, and God am I happy that I can't remember his name. So I really don't know if this show is going to catch on with anybody. I could be proven wrong, but yeah, I really don't know. Now, what I will say is that Dracula has one thing going for it and one thing going against it. The thing going against it is the fact that it's on Friday nights at 9 p.m., which is, for the most part, a Kiss of Death time slot.
Yeah, Friday's always been the Kiss of Death for television in general and science fiction in particular.
That being said, though, the thing it has going for it is that it's an American/British production, which means that the British television people actually have a hand in it, which means that they might actually do it right. I don't necessarily think that the chances are that great of it. I mean, after all, Torchwood Miracle Days was a American-British production, but it at least has a shot.
I would agree with exactly the sentiment that you just said. Having professional British entertainers on your side is definitely a plus, but it's not a guarantee of success.
Exactly.
I could tell you how to make this show a hit. Make Joss Whedon the showrunner and a spinoff of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
That would work. The difference being that Joss is kind of busy right now.
Joss wants to do something original and not rehash something he's done before? Jesus, Joss!
Well, I don't know if I'd necessarily go that far.
And I think it's a really good segue into what Joss is doing right now.
True enough. I know that this won't come as any great surprise to anybody who's listened to any of these shows, but we are particularly large fans of Joss Whedon's. Therefore, I can honestly say that Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is probably the show I'm looking the most forward to in the fall lineup.
We're fans of Joss Whedon? What? I'm just finding this out now?
Remember, when we said, what do we want our very first episode to be about? You said it has to be about Joss Whedon.
Oh yeah, I might recall something about that.
So let's count down the things that this show has in its favor already. Number 1, it's being written and produced by Joss Whedon.
Number two, it's being written and produced by Joss Whedon.
Number three, it's based in the same universe as last summer's incredibly, humongously successful The Avengers, which was written, produced, and directed by Joss Whedon. Number four, the lead character is Agent Phil Coulson.
His first name is Agent.
Who was significantly featured in The Avengers, which was written, produced, and directed by Joss Whedon.
In addition, ABC and Disney actually are backing this particular science fiction show, which is a big difference for network television. And it's written, produced, and directed by Joss Whedon.
Well, that is, in and of itself, a huge deal. Yes, Disney owns Marvel. Yes, Disney owns ABC. Yes, they're really going to support an in-house show, especially when it's part of a much larger franchise. The Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to work as a nice little thing to keep people thinking about the Marvel movies in between the times that they're actually coming out. It's a great marketing opportunity for Disney and for Marvel. So, believe it or not, people, this is a sci-fi rarity. A sci-fi show that the network actually wants to see succeed.
As you have so aptly stated, even though they may be paying $1 million per episode, it's like free advertising for the Disney Marvel movies in the theaters.
The Disney Marvel movies that are in the theaters, the toys that are produced, the Marvel comics themselves. You know, this is a great money-making opportunity for them. They don't want to see it fail. Oh, and it's written, produced, and directed by Joss Whedon.
Really? I'm just finding these out now?
So, not only does Disney want to see it succeed, and not only does Marvel want to see it succeed, and not only does ABC want to see it succeed, but I want to see it succeed.
Take that, Fox. Bring back Firefly.
The other show that qualifies as a superhero show, but only in the most vaguest of terms, is the WB's The Tomorrow People.
Oh, Jim, tell me about this. This sounds so original.
Well, it's about a group of individuals who are born with a genetic difference that makes them superhuman, and they all get gathered together as a group to serve on a team together. And this team is supposed to go on out and help people, even though people don't understand them, and even in some cases might hate them.
Wait a second. Did that sci-fi show Alphas get moved?
No. It might have been better if it had been.
Oh, Jim, Alphas was a good show.
Alphas had Summer Glau in it, so that's the best thing that I can say about it. And no, this isn't 3 Inches either, which was also a Sci-Fi Channel show that starred James Marsters.
Oh, okay, I'm getting confused. I think this was that syndicated show with John Shea in it, the one was Mutant X?
Getting closer, and the reason you're getting closer is because here in Illinois, that aired on WGN in syndication, which is now where the CW airs, and CW is the company that's airing The Tomorrow People. So at least you're on the right channel now.
Oh, okay. All right. I remember. It was 4400. It was the 4400.
No, you're on the wrong channel again. Get your remote. Get clicked over to the right channel.
All right. I think it was called Misfits of Science?
Oh, now come on. That's not fair. Don't put the Misfits of Science in the same category as the Tomorrow People. I mean, Misfits of Science was fun.
And it gave Courtney Cox the beginning of her career.
True enough. No. I think I've seen this in print somewhere. Oh, yeah, that's right. 1/3 of Marvel's titles.
All right, I give up. So, what is the Tomorrow People?
The Tomorrow People is Warner Brothers' attempt to capitalize on the popularity of X-Men, especially after X-Men First Class. Not to mention the popularity of The Wolverine, X-Men Origins Wolverine, X-Men 3, X-Men 2, X-Men, and the upcoming X-Men Days of Futures Past.
You know, we've already discussed that what advertisers really want to see is what was on last year and what was influential to the most amount of viewers. So it does make sense that they want to capitalize on the success of something like X-Men. However, Warner Brothers has an entire catalog of superheroes they could use.
Yes, an entire catalog of superheroes that they're in the process of trying to destroy thanks to the New 52.
But that being said, I mean, they don't even have to pick first stringers. I mean, Marvel's going to make a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. Okay, if you discount A-stringers like the Justice League of America and even their sidekicks, the Teen Titans, because they want those to be motion pictures, I mean, you've got Doom Patrol, you've got Suicide Squad, you have the Blasters. I mean, there's just a ton of other people with second stringers that they can pull out and make a superhero group of.
Yeah, but then you're going to have the haters who say that Hollywood never comes up with anything original coming out of the woodwork. I mean, yeah, Hollywood comes up with nothing original. We just went through a whole list of things that Tomorrow People reminds us of. But all that being said, yeah, it's a superhero TV show. They're not going to be in the tights, but it's a superhero show. I'm probably going to give it a try just to see what it's like and see how long it lasts.
The thing that I guess surprises me the most is I keep hearing that there's negotiations to bring back Heroes. Because overall, when you look at ratings, actually Heroes had really good ratings. And that they want to do a Heroes the Next Generation type show. So essentially, it's the same exact universe, just a different set of heroes. So I guess it's just what you just said. They need something original.
But yet not so original as to be risky. So, yes, there are only two superhero shows, but compare that to the one superhero show that came out last year, they've officially tripled in number. But that's just what's coming out in the fall. There are also other genre shows that are in the quote-unquote batter's box, ones that are waiting in the wings for either shows to fail or for them to go into hiatus, two of which are J.J. Abrams shows. Those shows are Believe, Almost Human, Intelligence, and Crossbones.
So, if you want me to watch a show by J.J. Abrams, I believe I will.
Given the two shows that are coming out, Almost Human does actually pique my interest more, even though the buddy cop show with one of the cops being a android has been done before.
You mean they've done a show about a man and machine before?
Yes, yes they have. But I think the machine in Man and Machine was a lot hotter than this one.
I think you're right, Jim. Although, given the years that it's been since Man and Machine was on, maybe not anymore.
On the flip side, Believe is about a little girl who has powers and is being hunted by people who want to control her powers. Which, again, kind of slightly reminds me of another 80s TV show called The Powers of Matthew Starr.
Fox just did a season or two with Kiefer Sutherland on Touch, which was about a little boy with powers, and he was trying to keep it out of the government's hands.
So, neither one of these ideas are particularly unique, but I will say that J.J. Abrams can oftentimes take a idea that isn't exactly brand new and make it his own, which is a little bit two-faced on our part, because we're willing to give J.J. Abrams the benefit of the doubt. But we're more than happy to roast the Tomorrow People over an open spit.
Well, I guess the only thing I would say in our favor is J.J. Abrams has a really good track record of, first of all, being successful, bringing quality entertainment to the masses, and second of all, reinvigorating old concept. In Cloverfield, he took the monster movie concept and turned it on its head. In Star Trek, he took something that was really 50 years old and made it brand new.
And let's be honest, Warner Brothers doesn't exactly have that same track record. I mean, they're in the process of trying to destroy things that are 50 plus years old by trying to make them new. But would you like to know how I really feel about DC Comics right now?
No. How do you feel about your toilet paper?
I prefer it to be a little bit softer than the stuff that DC is currently printing on.
Moving right along, I'm kind of looking forward to Crossbones. I expect to flop amazingly horribly, but I will watch every episode that airs, even if it's one.
Yeah, you were a bit more of a fan of the Pirates of the Caribbean than I was.
You just can't go wrong with pirates.
Yes, yes you can. But considering the fact that they're trying to do a Pirates of the Caribbean type feel, I think it'll probably be somewhat successful, except for the fact that it's set to air when Dracula goes off the air, which means it still has that Friday night at 9 p.m. Kiss of Death slot.
Hey, Jim, do you know what a pirate's favorite letter is?
Arrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr The last one on the list is Intelligence, which is going to be about a high-tech intelligence operative who has a microchip implanted in his brain, which makes him naturally smarter and everything else than anybody else.
In other words, it's Chuck, but not funny.
It's Jake 2.0, but without the Bionic Man references.
Man, we are really bitter about shows that aren't new concepts this year.
That's because there's so many of them. But as we've pointed out, new isn't what's wanted. What's wanted is stuff that is going to pretty much guarantee an audience.
Well, Jim, what sort of shows don't generate a lot of audience?
Those would be the canceled ones. The ones that last year they sat there and went, oh, this is going to get a great audience.
So you were big on 666 Park Avenue. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. 666 Park Avenue, I was ready to really celebrate when that one got canceled. Because I honestly didn't see how it could be a series for very long. And it wasn't something that would pique my interest. A hotel that is evil. Okay. In other words, it's in Washington, D.C.?
That's not evil. That's just slutty. As I said last year, I was going to watch Last Resort. And I did. And I think one of the things I said is I don't see how it could possibly get more than one season. And I'm perfectly comfortable with the fact that it got one season. It was an okay story, kind of original. Some of the actors and actresses were just absolutely brilliant on it. That I have to say. But the material they were given was not as brilliant as their performances.
Yeah, Last Resort was an original concept. Apparently network television has learned from that mistake.
There's one that kind of makes me sad because it really never got a shot, but it didn't really get a shot because there was nothing to connect it to an audience. I love Rodney S. O'Bannon. He really is a sci-fi genius. So I'm not sure where he pulled Cult from, but I think it's Where the Sun Doesn't Shine.
Yeah, I didn't watch The Cult. I know very, very little about it other than the fact that it's supposed to be about a cult who is following a mass murderer and basically them being mass murderers. It ain't Farscape.
That it wasn't. Now, Fringe being on this list is kind of unfair. So it's not like they just said, ah, Fringe sucks, we're going to cancel it. It's more like they said, this is the last year.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, the fact that Fringe got 5 years, I think is really a testament to...
I think it's a testament to John Noble, because he really captured that show.
Yes, he did. I think that it's more due to John Noble than even J.J. Abrams. This was one of those shows that was constantly on the bubble. They were getting just enough viewers to warrant not canceling it, but not enough viewers to warrant being a quick renewal.
For a network television program, it was really high concept.
Yes, and for a Fox show, it was really high concept.
Yeah, you pretty much have to add up the IQ of every viewer on Fox to get the IQ of one writer on Fringe.
But yes, I was sorry to see it go, except for the fact that that last season really wasn't as good as the previous four, to be honest.
You are correct. I think they were caught in a, we gotta wrap this up fast. So instead of telling good stories, they told as many little stories that they needed to tell to get the story wrapped up.
Also on this list is Touch, which you hit up on a moment ago, and honestly, I think that's all it really warranted. The only show that I think warrants less attention is Do No Harm. So, moving on.
Yeah, there are shows from last year that didn't get canceled, amazingly enough.
There are some shows that didn't get canceled, and how they didn't get canceled is completely beyond me.
We have an example here of a show that's so not on the list, it's because nobody knew it was on the air to begin with. So it was like, they didn't know they had to cancel it.
Here's hoping that they rectify that problem soon. The show that we're talking about is Neighbors, and if you want to know how we really feel about this show, go to last year's fall cast. We really did say enough about it then. But it really was on our list of shows that we expected to be canceled right out of the gate.
And, you know, the fact that it wasn't only means that not only did it have no viewers, but it had nobody at the network paying attention.
Either that or else the female lead spent a lot of time underneath a desk, one or the other. Once Upon a Time is coming back. Persons of Interest is coming back. Arrow is coming back for its second season, and not only is it coming back, but it's building in its own spinoff. So in that regard, DC is trying to take established characters and do something with them on their network.
It's just so painful to think about, though. I mean, the producers and writers of Arrow have made it perfectly clear, in their universe, there's no superpowers. And yet they're building Arrow to be a backdoor pilot for the Flash. And so, unless they're completely changing the meaning of what the Flash will be doing, I'm not sure how there could be no superpowers.
From what I have read, the plan is that, with the exception of dealing with the Flash, Arrow will continue to be the show with no superpowers. Flash is going to be the show where the people with superpowers show up, but they're going to be set in the same universe.
Yeah, I was around for the Mike Grell Arrow days, and this is not the Mike Grell Arrow. There was a period of time in the DC Universe where Arrow and Batman and The Question and one or two other characters had their own universe. They were all the non-powered heroes, and everything that was dealt with in those comic books was unique. They didn't acknowledge anything that happened in the superhero comic books. But the superhero comic books acknowledged everything that happened in this little pocket universe, so it was like a one-way mirror.
Now, as badly as I've been talking about Warner Brothers and DC, Arrow has not been a bad show. It hasn't been blow-my-socks-off, I-hope-this-runs-for-the-next-millennia type show, but it's not a bad show either. That being said, though, if they can start building a cohesive universe on television at least, even if it's not in the movies, at least they'll be building in something vaguely resembling the right direction.
But after Arrow, CW shows Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, I tried watching 2 episodes of it and had to stop after that because it was not my Beauty and the Beast. I don't care if the lead characters' names were Vincent and Catherine. It wasn't my Beauty and the Beast. My sister, on the other hand, enjoyed it a lot.
I think I fall in between there. I never watched the original, so I don't have the "this is not the Beauty and the Beast," but I certainly didn't think it was great. If it had been canceled, I'd have been okay.
Do you realize that with Beauty and the Beast and Elementary both making it through to a second season, the kiss of death has expired?
Part of that is because Elementary actually turned out to be a halfway decent show. It's no Sherlock, but for American network television, it's among the top of the shows. For Beauty and the Beast, I got nothing.
Well, as we said when we did the Beauty and the Beast podcast, it's on the CW. It would have to really bomb badly for the CW not to continue carrying it. I mean, the CW has decided to cancel Nikita, but is still going to give it 6 more episodes so they can tie up their storylines.
You know, I have enjoyed Nikita. I wouldn't say I loved it, but I've enjoyed it. But it jumped the shark like a couple seasons ago.
Oh, big time.
I'm looking at our list and thinking CW. We got Arrow, Beauty and the Beast, Nikita, Supernatural, The Vampire Diaries. And I'm thinking, maybe CW is just like, that's good enough.
But the scary thing is that the CW does better at programming sci-fi / fantasy shows and making them work than the Sci-Fi Channel does.
God, I hate the Sci-Fi Channel.
Why would you hate a channel that builds up a fan base for a TV show just to turn around and cancel it when it's at the peak of its popularity?
That talks about just about every actual genre show that's been on Sci-Fi Channel. I was going to say, I know you're talking about Farscape, but, you know, Farscape, Battlestar Galactica, I mean, just like show after show after show.
Actually, that was my intent. I mean, Eureka, Warehouse 13... I remembered watching the last few episodes of season 4 of Warehouse 13, and I'm seeing car advertisements built in it, and I'm seeing the product placements. I'm looking online, and I'm seeing that it has the highest ratings that it's had basically ever.
Sci-Fi Channel cancels it.
It makes no sense.
Well, why do you need a good show when you have Sharknado?
Why do you need a good show when you can put in its place Ghost Hunters Australia?
Why do you need actors and actresses when you've got Tara Reid?
Why do you need actors and actresses when you can have people who are willing to take chairs to the head?
You know, if I were producing Face Off, it would have an entirely different meaning.
It would be a weekly series based on the movie called Face Off.
Sort of. There's a Doctor Who episode where they're all going through reality TV shows, and Captain Jack is going through what not to wear, and they have the face-off competition. And he says, "What's that?" And they say, "Face off." And that's what I would do to the entire executive committee of the Sci-Fi Channel.
Now, the last two shows that are returning aren't on the CW, and that's Grimm and Revolution. Grimm is going into its third season, and again, it's one of those shows I watch it. It's not one of those that I necessarily want to get on DVD, but it's good enough that I continue to watch it.
Yes. The best thing that I have to say about Grimm is it's from the Joss Whedon Buffy the Vampire Slayer camp. Even though Joss has nothing to do with it, it's his next generation doing science fiction. Not as good as Joss, but adequate for network television.
Yeah. And then you have Revolution, which is J.J. Abrams.
Not as good as J.J. Abrams, but I would say adequate for network television.
I'll be honest, Revolution was one of those shows where just about the time where I would sit there and go, I don't know if I want to continue watching this or not. They would put just enough of a twist on something to make me go, okay, I want to see where this ends up going. And they managed to keep me hooked all season by doing that. So I'm going to be interested in seeing where season two goes.
They're going to Texas, I read.
Yeah, I meant story-wise.
Oh, I'm going to give it a shot. I really like Elizabeth Mitchell. You know, she's been part of the J.J. Abrams group for a while now, and I think she's a spectacular actress. And again, I think you're right. It's just what I'm like, this is kind of boring. They put a twist on it. So the person that I want to see off the show right now is Elizabeth Mitchell's daughter. And she's kind of the star of the show, but she just does nothing for me. The actress is kind of cute, and you know, as a misogynist, that's important. But her character seems to be like the Luke Skywalker of the show. She's just a whiny bitch.
Well, it's funny because J.J. Abrams has a few things in common with Joss Whedon in the fact that he likes to take the lead actress and kind of put her in the forefront, kind of make her the lead character. We saw the same thing with Olivia in Fringe. But the daughter does remind me a lot of Olivia, and that's not necessarily a compliment, because Olivia, for the first three seasons, was just kind of dead-eyed. She was bland, and the daughter is kind of bland. You know, she's supposed to be this action hero, and A, the way she developed into an action hero didn't really feel that organic. It kind of felt like she kind of stumbled into it. And like you said, there's really nothing about her that makes you sit there and go, oh wow, I really want to get behind this character. Which is completely different from Joss Whedon, because while Joss enjoyed putting the female lead in the front, like with Buffy, you really liked Buffy. You rooted for Buffy. You cared what happened to Buffy. You don't really care about what happens to the daughter.
And here we are, we're talking about this character, and we both like this television show, and neither one of us can think of what her name is. I mean, that's how important she is to us. I know that the bad guy is Monroe, and I know that the uncle is Miles Madsen. I mean, I know the characters, and I have no idea what this daughter character is called.
And she's the lead. But that being said, yes, I want to see where the cliffhanger goes. I will be watching it. The question is for how long? How many times can you twist things to rejuvenate it enough to make me go, ooh, I want to see where this is going. So, of all those shows that we just listed, Doug, what are you most looking forward to in the fall?
Well, first of all, you have to set the bar pretty low, because there's nothing on that entire list, Jim, that I wouldn't be willing to give up right now. That being said, it's such a toss-up. I have to think that in reality, even though I think this is only a mediocre show, it's Grimm.
I do enjoy Grimm. I would actually put Arrow higher on that list. Not because I think it's that great of a show, but because I'm looking forward to seeing some of the people that have been announced to be coming. I know that Summer Glau is going to be playing one of the big bad guys for the season. And anything that Summer Glau is in, I have to watch.
You know, Summer Glau automatically for me does add a star on anything. So if it's like a 2-star show, having Summer Glau on it automatically makes it a 3-star show.
So knowing that Summer Glau is coming, does that put Arrow higher on the list?
No, not really, because the show is not a 2-star show. The three that I'm thinking of, the three that are my toss-up, are Arrow, Grimm, and Revolution. And I like Arrow, but I don't love it. I like Grimm, but I don't love it. And I like Revolution, but here's the pattern. I don't love it, So it's really hard to say which one of the three shows is most on my list.
In that regard, though, Grimm does have some pretty good actors on it. I really like the girlfriend. This show also has a Monroe, and he is kind of a werewolf-type creature.
He's supposed to be the big bad wolf. I mean, literally, that's what it's supposed to be.
But he's a good guy. He doesn't like to wolf out. He wants to try to help people. And he's essentially become Nick's kind of sidekick. And I think he really does a good job.
There's a whole side story about Monroe and Monroe's girlfriend, which is just one of my favorite parts of the whole show because it's cute.
It is incredibly cute. If I had to pick one lead female character, it would actually be Monroe's girlfriend. Because she is just, for lack of a better term, she's just adorable. She's very attractive, but her attractiveness tends to lean more towards the girl next door type attractiveness. And she just has this cutesiness about her. And the fact that she turns into a Vesson doesn't detract from the fact that she's just so darn cute.
I don't know how to say it, but that's just so appealing. I mean, there's so much about television which is disgusting and unappealing. And here, they really have the show. I mean, the main character, Nick, he's a homicide detective. So a lot of the show is about death and really gruesome things. And then to kind of just say, yes, but this is still a good world. This is still good people. They have these other two characters. And I think it really balances out the show. You know, the gore on the one side and the happiness on the other side.
Yeah, and these two characters really do represent the good of the Vesson society, because usually the big bad guy of the week is a visiting Vesson who Nick has to take down because he's a Grimm, he's a monster hunter, but yet he has these two quote-unquote monsters that are very dear to him, who are very close to him, who are developing a loving relationship. And it takes the whole concept of all of these creatures are bad and says, yeah, but they're not. They might be Vesson, they might be monsters, but they're still human.
I think that's a really good point. It's that moral compass of the show. Nick and his people are monster hunters. What they do literally is they find the monsters and they cut their heads off. And it's one of those things that there's no trial, just execution. And now they're kind of saying, maybe that's not the right way to investigate this. Maybe there's more to it.
Yeah, there's a plumber who is a Vesson who, the second he finds out that Nick is a Grimm, just loses his mind. Just starts begging, please don't kill me. Because in the Vesson society, the Grimms are the Grim Reapers. They are the people who, when they show up, people die. And Nick is trying to become something different, something that is better than what has come before. And he's starting to get Vesson who are looking at him and going, hey, this is actually a decent human being. This is somebody who is not just out to kill us, but who is trying to look out for our best interests the same as the mortals.
Well, that's kind of, I guess, the point of Nick being a detective. For him, right and wrong are the most important things. And there's a moral black and white. And he is there to protect the innocent, or literally, to serve and protect. It's just as important for Nick to protect the Vesson as it is to protect humans.
And as much as we're talking this show up, in everything that we've said, it's what causes us to like the show. The writing doesn't always support these good characters that they've developed. It happens every once in a while.
Oh, it's funny, because the show's got this morality play in the background, kind of like Star Trek. And then they have the foreground, and it'd be like, if foreground was good, the show would be great. I mean, there's things like one of the Vesson was a dragon, and he was collecting copper pipe because dragons needed copper for their nests. I mean, it was really incredibly ridiculous.
So the background stuff is fantastic, and it's what keeps bringing us back week after week. The foreground stuff, the Vesson of the week, that's the stuff that they really need to kind of work on getting better.
It'd be fine just to have Nick as a detective and go after real, well, I guess they are real murderers, but go after human murderers just as much as Vesson murderers.
And, of course, as I said, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the show that I am looking the most forward to.
People with a brain, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the show you should be looking most forward to.
So, we've spent a lot of time this year talking about the genre stuff, probably because there's more genre stuff to talk about than in the past few years. But let's take a couple of minutes to quickly go through the non-genre stuff.
I'm looking forward, Jim, to this scientific show about the water cycle. It's called Rain.
Yeah, wrong type of rain. R-E-I-G-N.
Say what?
It's a historical drama about the rise to power of one of the queens. I don't remember which one. And no, I'm not talking about George Takei.
There's some dramas coming up also.
Yeah, you've got Betrayal, you've got Crisis, you've got Hostages, you've got The Blacklist, and you've got Lucky Seven.
So what's the show called?
That was the name of the shows.
Oh, okay. Oh boy, I'm really dumb today.
What have you been doing? Watching network television again? Honestly, the only one on this list that would even come close to piquing my interest would be The Blacklist. And no, not really interested in seeing a tweaked version of Silence of the Lambs.
Now, if we're looking for originality, Ironsides is coming back.
Yeah.
I think the funny part is they're actually digging up Raymond Burr to make him do it again.
They're just going to stick him in a wheelchair and roll him around. Yeah, I know that Hawaii Five-0 has been popular for the past few years, but really, you're going to dig up Ironside to be a reimagined, updated version of an old cop show? What are we going to have next year? Hunter?
Cop Rock. It's on right after Glee.
The scary thing is that I think Cop Rock would actually work better now than it did when it first aired.
I was completely joking about it being on after Glee, but can you imagine that 2 hours of television? Glee, followed by Cop Rock.
Yeah, it would give me 2 hours of free time. The other legal drama is called Rake, and other than the fact that it's a legal drama and it's called Rake, I have no idea what it's about because I have no interest in watching it.
Jim is now looking at me for some sort of joke or comment about it, and I'm going to say, insert illegal immigrant joke here, because it's not funny.
Comedies. Now, it's funny because a couple of years ago, I pretty much wanted to write off anything comedy-related because I just didn't find them funny. And then I started watching The Big Bang Theory, and I started catching some How I Met Your Mother in repeats. And I've been finding that I've been a little biased as far as comedies go. That's not to say that I think all comedies are good. I still think that 9 out of 10 comedies are absolute garbage. I'm just willing to bump that number up to 9 from 10.
Before starting this podcast, I read a news article online. It was called The 7 Television Shows to Avoid This Year. And number one on their list was The Goldbergs.
The Goldbergs have racial insensitivity written all over them. And honestly, that is the reason why a lot of these are just shows that I have no interest in seeing. You've got We Are Men, which, given the fact that it has Jerry O'Connell and Tony Shalhoub in it, should make me want to watch this show. The fact that it's about a bunch of single guys who don't have any clue as to how to interact with the fairer sex and are basically even more misogynistic than my friend here makes me have no interest in seeing it whatsoever.
See, my problem is, with the description that you just gave, it should be a show like on right after Big Bang Theory because it's certainly about nerds.
No, not nerds, just morons.
See, there's the difference. Big Bang Theory is about smart people.
Speaking of The Big Bang Theory, the producers of that show have a new show coming out called Mom, which stars Anna Faris, who normally I kind of like her as an actress, but again, I've got no interest in seeing the show. You've got Trophy Wife, which kind of explains itself, and yeah, again, no interest.
You know, I want to see Dads for one reason, Seth Green.
Yes. Here's another example. It's Seth Green. It's being produced by Seth MacFarlane. I like The Family Guy, so this should be a show that I should be sitting there going, oh, this is one that I'll watch. And I'm really, really torn about it, because I really like Seth Green as an actor, and I really like Seth MacFarlane as a writer, for the most part. But the subject of dads moving in with their sons and making their lives miserable isn't something that is necessarily drawing me in.
See, now, if that show had been called Mom, about moms moving in with their sons and making them miserable, well, then it makes perfect sense.
But then you go back to that Jewish stereotype thing.
Shut up.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine is a comedy about cops in New York and stars the guy from Saturday Night Live, Sandberg. And I didn't find him funny on Saturday Night Live. I didn't find him funny in any of the clips for any of the movies that he's been in recently. So I don't see why I would want to watch the show that features him, and I don't find him funny.
You really had me at, I didn't find him funny on Saturday Night Live, and that's one aspect of being old. Being old enough to remember when Saturday Night Live was funny.
Ah, the good old days.
Or even remembering when it was socially relevant. The one thing that they could do right now that would totally improve Saturday Night Live would be to fire Lorne Michaels. And I'm not a Family Guy fan. I'm not a Seth MacFarlane fan. But I'm telling you, if you put Seth MacFarlane in charge of Saturday Night Live, it would be both funny and socially relevant.
And it would get back the edge that Saturday Night Live was known for back in the day.
Yeah, Saturday Night Live, if you could remember John Belushi in his samurai days, his sword was very sharp. And the wit of Saturday Night Live at that time was equally sharp.
And he wielded both with reckless abandon. And some of these, I know nothing about them. I don't want to know anything about them. About a Boy, Growing Up Fisher, Back in the Game, Super Fun Night. Oh, Super Fun Night I do know something about, and makes me definitely not want to see that show. And that's the fact that it stars Rebel Wilson, who is probably the least funny and most offensive person in comedy right now. I have nothing but disdain for her because the very few things that I've seen her in. I'm not a woman, but I was offended for women just because she is of that sex. The Millers stars Will Arnett as a guy who is forced to move back in with his parents. And because he's actually seeking some happiness, it causes his dad to want to move out and basically leaves him with his mother, as far as I can tell. But there's really not much in that description that makes me go, oh yeah, that would make a great comedy.
I was just joking about moms and dads. Okay, now the Crazy Ones, I mean, that does have two things going for it.
Yes, the Crazy Ones is the 1 out of 10 on this list that I actually want to try. I'm not sure if it's going to be good or not, but I'm at least willing to sit down and watch 2 or 3 episodes of it to see what it's going to be like. Those two things are
Robin Williams and Sarah Michelle Gellar. And not necessarily in that order, but whatever.
Yeah, Sarah Michelle Gellar has Buffy going for her. She also has that catastrophe that was on the CW a couple of years ago, too. But we won't hold that against her. And it's Robin Williams. I mean, Robin Williams is coming back to television. Has his career sunk that low, or does he have faith in this project?
You know, again, talking about articles that I've seen, is there are a lot of movie stars who are coming back to television because you do, you know, that short period of time where you work and then you can go back to the movies. It was Kevin Spacey specifically talking about movie stars coming back to television.
Personally, I hope it's the latter. I hope that he has faith in this project and that it's going to turn out to be as good as their credentials lead me to think that it should be.
I hope so. I don't think so, but that doesn't mean I've abandoned all hope.
The other comedy that I'm actually going to try this year is The Michael J. Fox Show.
Yes, that's one that I will watch even if it's bad.
I mean, it's Michael J. Fox making fun of the fact that he has Parkinson's. Which, anybody else trying to do it would be majorly offensive. The fact that he's doing it, I find incredibly humorous.
I would say that there is humor in the fact that the character has Parkinson's, but I don't think it's really making fun of that character. I just think it's part of that character's life. And really, the humor, I hope, is in what's funny about this guy's life.
Yes, the fact that he is a former TV personality who was diagnosed with Parkinson's, left television to try to get a handle on his life, and now he's realizing, hey, I'd really like to get back to television and get back to doing what I enjoy doing, and the humor that surrounds this adventure and him having a family and them dealing with it. I mean, he's really drawing from his own life, and I'm actually looking forward to the snapshot of Michael J. Fox as much as any comedy that's going to erupt from it.
I agree. It's weird, because I don't work in California, I'm not this big movie star person, but I found the celebrities that I've met, a lot of them I haven't liked. The real people, it's not that they can't measure up to their character. I don't care that Arnold Schwarzenegger is not the Terminator. In fact, I'm pretty glad that he's not. But that being said, Michael J. Fox has always struck me as actually better than the characters he plays. It's kind of like, well, I can play somebody who's a jerk, but I'm not.
On the flip side, you have Shaun Saves the World, which stars Sean Hayes from back at Will and Grace. He was the next door neighbor. And basically, I have no interest in it whatsoever. I didn't like Sean Hayes. It looks like he's playing Jack, only now he's got a kid.
Jim, there's the queen I was thinking about earlier.
And then you have the shows Welcome to the Family and Enlisted, and neither one of them has even been a blip on my radar, to be honest.
I saw a trailer for Enlisted, and I was amazed at how much, like, Stripes it was, but not funny.
And there's your problem. Stripes was a very funny movie. To have a show be like Stripes, but not funny, why on earth do you bother?
It was like the producer went, I am going to take everything from Stripes, except the humor.
And to wrap things up, there is one reality show that's coming on in the fall called Junior MasterChef. It's a kid's version of Gordon Ramsay's MasterChef.
I would argue that this is kind of a comedy because the idea that anybody's going to watch this is really funny. But it was in that list of 7 shows not to watch.
Wow. That's actually kind of impressive because Gordon Ramsay actually has a fairly decent following. And it must be really bad to fall into that category. So, all of that being said, non-genre shows that you're looking most forward to returning.
Thankfully, your list gives me an idea of shows that I will be watching this year. Of course, I will be watching Big Bang Theory, Elementary, Castle, Bones.
Yeah, the only two that were on my list that aren't on your list are Two Broke Girls and CSI. I'm still hanging on to CSI, even though CSI New York got canceled. Even though every year you make fun of me for watching it, I still enjoy CSI. And Kat Dennings on Two Broke Girls is enough reason for me to watch it. I don't care how bad the writing is.
I could not possibly answer that without a misogynistic remark. But I would be happy to watch Kat Dennings' chest for half an hour any day of the week.
And it's funny. It's written by Whitney Cummings, who also had a second show last year called Whitney that I found incredibly funny, but I think I was one of 3 people on the face of the earth who did. It was constantly being raked over the coals by those who were supposedly in the know, but considering that they are the ones who put through those other 9 out of 10 shows, I don't hold their opinion in very high regard.
Understood. And I have a shameless plug. Something new that I'm going to be trying this year, and that I hope our audience will watch also. It's called The Mindy Project. I can't tell you anything about it except for it's a show that's returning, and I have a relative who will be working on it. So for the shameless plug, please watch The Mindy Project.
It's his relative working on it. I can't recommend it. But you know what? For her, I'll say, yeah, go on ahead, hit yourself in the head a few times, and go watch The Mindy Project. So, there is our very long-winded explanation as to what you should watch, why you should watch it, and what not to watch. You can take our advice, you can leave our advice, you can write us and tell us we're full of it, you can write us and tell us, hey, you were right on the mark, just write us already!
As always, we thank you for listening to TwerpCast. We would appreciate your feedback, as Jim has just indicated. Please write Jim at twerponline.net. We can also be found on Facebook, MySpace, Zanga, and Google+.
Thanks for listening, everybody. TwerpCast is a production of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2013.
Ben Affleck, Batman for never.